And joining us in studio today, Dr. Mensing from the practice. Hey,
hi,
Doc.
There.
How was your weekend, buddy?
My weekend was spent at the, besides church Sunday morning, was spent at the fair.
Were you at the fair yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was there on Saturday. Yeah.
Saturday was a busy day. In fact, I think I heard it was the largest one-day amount of people in the history of the fair.
See, I told Laura this.
Now, I'm not sure if that's accurate or not.
No, I believe
I was because told that one of the fair guys.
I'm technically disabled. I have a disability. I cannot walk long distances, so I have a blue card to hang from my rearview mirror. Now, I have never seen it before at the fair where every single handicapped space is occupado.
Yep.
And even if it were to be the case, there are still tons of spaces all over the place.
It's close.
But I had to go all the way to the back. But I couldn't do it. So I told Laura, I can't do this. So we went out, went back in, and paid an extra $5 to get into the preferred space,
sure. Yep.
Which has handicapped spaces there. So that was good. But it was a hot day, miserable day on Saturday for me. But it had to be I think you're right, a record attendance on Saturday.
I don't know the numbers, but this is what some of the people, the fair people told us.
Did you get to eat any fair food while you were there?
Let's put it this way, the quality of the food is not good for you, much of it. But and the price leaves something to be desired.
It's delicious. We found the best pie, the best pies I've ever had. You've got it next year, you've got to try the pies.
The pie.
They got it the first year they've ever had this trailer there, so they were doing pie. Let me ask you a question. I was reading an article the other day about this sharp rise in beard transplants.
I know we talked in that crazy.
Have you ever heard of we all have heard of hair transplants, right?
That's correct.
For guys that are going bald and don't want to wear a toupee and whatnot, or do the Donald Trump comb over thing. But beard transplants, yeah. It says here that a nonprofit organization, the International Society of Hair Restoration Surgery, says beard transplants accounted for 1.5% of all hair restoration procedures in 2012, but that number spiked to 3.7% in 2014 and continuing to rise. Beard transplants. In fact, here's a doctor in New York City said that used to perform about 5 procedures a year, but now says he performs an average of 3 a week.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Beard transplants.
Before I walked in here, I'd never heard of this.
You are a big-time doctor, big-time brain surgeon guy, and you've never heard of beard transplants?
No.
Well, join the
club.
Honestly, I was thinking when they come up with eyebrow transplants, we could finally, fix Jose Gaspar over there at Channel 58. I'm serious. We found a way for you to get eyebrows there, Jose. But so beard, you've never heard of beard?
No, it's, really, it's not my
guys, thing. Some guys have trouble growing beards, and I guess it harms their self-esteem, Doc.
Now, you can comment where they get the hair from.
From their tuchus.
Some people might think otherwise.
No, they go to the back of the head and they take individual follicles out of the back of their heads and then go around and somehow transplant the follicle into a follicle that doesn't work. You figure that's how it's done?
They often will take hair transplant. A lot of people don't understand, but hair transplant, they don't actually work with individual follicles. They'll take strips of hair or circles of hair, and they transplant those.
I've seen that.
Or sometimes hair transplant, they'll literally put they can put what's called expanders to stretch the scalp. Then they cut out the center of the scalp with no hair on and pull the other part of the hair up to it. That's been
So their ears are like up on
no,
the side?
No, the ears don't move.
That's bizarre. Really?
Yes.
No, I do remember back in the, this would have been back in the early 80s. As a matter of fact, this was back when I was at KSLY in San Luis Obispo working with my friend Harry May. There was a sales rep for our radio station, and the top of, you ever taken a doll or your sister when you were a kid, she took one of her dolls and cut all of its hair off and it had those little dots?
Stuff. Oh, yes.
The little dots of hair. This is what the top of his head looked like.
The old time Bosley people used to do that.
Is that what that was? Yeah. So it's not like that anymore. So you don't end up.
You don't know. That's today we have much better techniques.
So then,
you don't
want to take an individual follicle, but you won't look like you've got a doll's head.
No, I don't. That's it's much more better today.
I would certainly hope so. Real quick, I wanted to talk to you about dementia. I talked to my wife about this recently. I think I'm coming down with it. I think I'm coming down with dementia. I think I'm going nuts, Doc.
Well, you know, it's interesting, but you wouldn't be alone. There's almost 4.6 to 5.6 million people.
Really?
So you'd be in good company.
So I'd be in good company there. And I'm assuming there's people like Joe Biden and possibly Donald Trump. I don't know. I don't know, but it is
common. Probably the most important thing with dementias, we used to think, Jazz, when I went to medical school, and for years, so, you know, last 30 years, we've been looking for the silver bullet, all right, for what causes dementia, what one thing there is, we have in the brain what's called neurofibrillary tangles, and it's a big word for saying there's scar in the brain. We didn't used to realize it was a scar phenomenon, but literally it's a scar phenomenon.
So it's a physical thing?
Yeah, you can look on the microscope and see that. Now, there's some other things like that cause dementia, like Parkinson's, Lewy body dementia. There's some viruses like Jakob Creutzfeldt, things like that, but they're rare by and large.
Can those be cured?
No, cannot. Yeah. But regular dementia, you know, garden variety dementia kind of thing, we used to look at as these inflammatory lesions as the cause, all right? And the newest research, and this is very early, we don't know for sure it's going, you know, this is the way it's going to be, but this is the way the research is kind of going. The newest idea is about dementia. These neurofibrillary tangles that we see are not the cause, but the result of some inflammatory process, all right? In fact, there's some new studies that suggest our thinking is not just one cause thinks that, but they have identified maybe as many as 38 different causes. And and many dementias, it's not just one cause. It may be a number of them. And if you don't know, some people have described it as having the brain with a tent over top with a bunch of holes in it. And you can have one or 35 or whatever. But if you don't plug all those holes, you will not get better. And it's not going to be one thing. It may be a selenium deficiency. It may have some problems with D3. It may be thyroid issues. And it may be just some other things. But if you don't get them all, we probably are not going to be work. And the second issue is it is probably an anti-inflammatory issue. And how this has come out, we have now documented evidence that things like Motrin, ibuprofen, in some studies have shown to have some changes with inflammatory processes in the brain. But really what kicked it off was there's a drug called Enbrel, but it's a rheumatoid arthritis.
Heard about it, yeah.
It's very expensive. It's a phenomenal, it's a what we call a TNF alpha blocker. But make a long story short, it's a very, it blocks certain types of inflammation, not only in the joints of the arthritic patient, but it also blocks the inflammation in the brain. And we now have studies that shows that there's a decreasing dementia in these patients. That's amazing. And this is where now the research is going, maybe these dementias are a cause of an inflammatory process, and what are the inflammatory processes causing it? So there's a whole bunch of them that we haven't thought about before, and it may not be one, you know, there may not be one silver bullet that's going to cure everybody, right? And so it's a totally new area, totally new.
My mother suffered from dementia. She, in the latter years of her life, she was a sweet woman. I mean, she would become so embarrassed. She would sit there. So I was taking care of her, you know, for the last four of the last five of her life. And I was there with her every day. She had severe diabetes and had to have her leg amputated. And she just loved to sit and watch her game shows and watch her stories, you know, soap operas and all of that. And then I would, since I couldn't stand that, I would be in the other room watching, watching Fox News. And then she would yell at me to come in here. I would get up and walk into the family room where she was sitting in her little recliner. And she would say, "Jazz, what's that squirrel doing here?" And I'd look over. She'd be pointing at the sofa across the room. And I'd say, "What is, squirrel?" "Yes, he's sitting right there looking at me. What's he doing there?" And I looked. I said, "Mother, that's a stuffed toy. That's one of the baby's stuffed toys." I'd walk over and pick it up and bring it over to her. She goes, "Oh, it is. But I'm telling you, I thought it was a squirrel." One morning, she's in bed. She gets up. She goes into the bathroom. And I was down the hall in the kitchen. And she yells for me to come down the hall. I go in there. She's in the bathroom up against the wall. She's got her little, you know, walker. And she's pushed up against the wall. She says, "What's that squirrel doing there?" She saw squirrels everywhere, Doc.
Now, there's a... It depends on, this can come in either be delusions or certain parts of the brain have to do with what we call fusion of sight, things like that. And literally, you can have a stroke or Alzheimer's that will affect any part of the brain. And literally...
Is Alzheimer's a form of dementia?
Yeah, it is. Probably the most common, by the way.
Wow, really?
4.5, 4.6 million people have Alzheimer's today. Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, it really is.
And there's not an awful lot you can do. Maybe a good thing we should talk about, too, is a lot of people don't know this, but there is one correctable form of dementia. And as physicians, we are very careful for this. But there's a triad that is important. And if you have a patient with, and this is why I believe that every dementia patient one time should be imaged with either CT or MR.
Mm-hmm.
One time. It just has to be done. Because there's a triad of what's called normal pressure hydrocephalus, but it's where they have a dementia, they have trouble walking, gait disturbance, and they have incontinence. And these patients have increased pressure in their brain, hydrocephalus, and if you shunt these patients, they're back to normal. And the classic example, when I was, one time I was, when I was doing neurosurgery, I had a patient come in to see me, and he was sent to me because of possible normal pressure hydrocephalus, and he had a CT that fit that. And one of the things we do is we'll take, this patient came in a wheelchair, Jazz. He didn't know who I was. His son brought him in and barely knew who his son was. He was in a diaper and he couldn't walk, all right? And we set him up for a lumbar puncture. And essentially, we take this fluid we send up for testing. But more important than that, we take about 25 to 50 cc's of fluid, a lot of fluid off real slowly. And it decreases the pressure. So we did that and we brought him back the next day. This patient walked in, wow, introduced me to his son, was in his right mind, and normal bladder control. Now, it doesn't last that long because the pressure will build up again, but these are the patients that,
how
if you do
he,
this...
When did he have to come back? How often well, would you have to come back?
Well, we shunt them within the next couple of days, and then they're back to normal, all right? But though, when you've seen that as a physician, some of these dramatic cases, you don't want to ever miss a normal pressure hydrocephalus. Now, most cases of dementia are not that, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's a bunch of things you can do to help. All right, and we'll talk about those. There's a whole bunch of things. In fact, we'll go over what we do in the office ourselves when we have dementia patients. But there is no real cure for most
for most dementia.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. Come right back. 399-1560. If you have a question for the doc, we shall return. This is KNZR.
KNZR, Bakersfield's talk radio leader. There are two kinds of talk radio shows. The Jazz McKay Show is the other kind. You're listening to Jazz McKay on KNZR.
The practice is prepaid. Family Medical. For just $69 a month, you get unlimited access to Dr. Mensick and the staff. No co-pays, and you'll have the peace of mind knowing that you have a doctor that's there for your needs. The practice, 871-3300. Our phone number, 399-1560. And we will go to Dale first. Dale, you got a question for the doc.
Yes. My father died of prostate cancer. And I have two brothers. I mean, I had three, but one died. Me and my one brother didn't have vasectomies. The two others that had vasectomies, one died of prostate cancer, the other one has it. Is there any correlation between vasectomies and prostate cancer?
Dale, I don't, from what I understand, no, I don't think there is. But I really haven't looked at that very recently. But
okay.
I don't know.
I just wondered if there was
any published
thing in the Lancet or anywhere.
No, not that I know of. I mean, I'm really not up to date on that to tell you for sure that was vasectomy and prostate cancer. I don't know for sure, but I don't, maybe a better way to say it, I don't know of any.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, Dale, appreciate the call. Mark, you're next on the Jazz McKay Show. How are you, bud?
Oh, great. Love your show, Jazz. Can't wait to see you again on the golf course.
Big 10-4.
Doctor, I have a question for you. I have acute neuropathy, unfortunately, from diabetes. Neuropathy pain is absolutely hideous. I was on Tramadol, which treated the pain absolutely wonderfully. Take the Tramadol, wouldn't have it. Unfortunately, when you go to these nameless clinics, and I want to point out that I really miss the days of the good old-fashioned family doctor. I think this concept that you're bringing is really fantastic, where you have a doctor that knows you, and you're not some nameless, faceless patient among 500 others that are in the waiting room that day.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, when I went to this nameless clinic, they took me off of the pain medicine, cold turkey. I had been on it for a year. Cold turkey, had to go through 11 days of withdrawal. Just hideous. They put me on a medication called Lyrica now that doesn't seem to work the same way. My question is, the reason they took me off of Tramadol is they claim that because of the DEA and the crackdown on this supposed way of controlling controlled substances. What they're really, in effect, doing is limiting the access to people who really need these pain meds, and the criminals have them anyway. I could literally go down the street to the corner and buy my pain medicine from some criminal who got it at another doctor's office. So what's your thoughts on this, and have you run into patients that are having the same problem?
Mark, the tramadol works. It's a good medicine. It's the problem with tramadol, I don't know the reason that why they stopped it, but here's the issues with tramadol. Number one is it has a tremendous amount of drug interactions with other potential medicines, all right, especially some serious reactions, especially with diabetes medicine and hypertension medicine. So many of the times, it is a choice of what's the least worse or the least risk. I have patients come in, and I'll have they're on tramadol with a bunch of other medicines, and they're come from other clinics, and the doctor will have not checked. We check all our patients for interactions, and there'll be maybe three or four contraindications of this combination of tramadol with a bunch of medicines. And what it becomes for the physician is it is one of two things. You have to look at these contraindications and look at what is the risk, all right? What is the risk? And then document, I've looked at these. I don't think the risk is that great. He's doing fine. Let's leave it that way, all right? That's one way of dealing with it. Number two, we do that in our office. If the patient's doing well on the tramadol, nothing else is working kind of thing. Number two is that sometimes the risk is not worth it, all right? The doctor may look at it and say, hold her, I don't like this combination. I don't think this risk is worth it. And I think this guy's going to get in trouble if we continue this way. Let's stop it, all right? The third thing that happens is that you have, with tramadol specifically, because it's become a scheduled drug, there are all the DEA and the Department of Justice issues with it. So it becomes many doctors today are afraid of the DEA, the Department of Justice. There is really no need to be afraid, all right? The DEA and Department of Justice is not out there to hurt patients or to get after doctors, all right? And providing you have a physician who has never been in trouble and does not have a restricted license, okay? Because there's many doctors out there that have restricted license, can't order it, all right? And the doctor isn't going to tell you that. He's going to say, you don't need it, all right?
Yeah.
But as long as you have a doctor that doesn't have a restricted license, there's no reason why you can't use it. Mm-hmm. But we have some physicians who have restricted license that can't do that, and they're often not going to tell you that up front. So that's the third issue we have. I personally think that if tramadol is the only thing you're doing, you're probably okay. But most of the time, for a diabetic patient who has a neuropathy, these patients are going to be on multiple other medicines,
right.
And there are better ways to solve it because the risk becomes very high with complications. It's not that we don't do it, and I have patients on tramadol with others, but we prefer not to because when you get three or four contraindications that can kill you if things go wrong, all right, or have serious issues, it becomes incumbent on the doctor to say, is this the benefit of this combination worth it or not? Do you follow? And it may be the doctor will say yes and document, I think it's worth the risk, and I'm going to watch these contraindications, these complications occur, and leave it at that way. Or the doctor may look and says, no, in my judgment, I don't want to go here. And it has a lot to do with, Jazz, the comfortability, or is that the right word? But the how comfortable the doctor is with this patient, knowing will he get in trouble?
Well, he's got a point when he says he's at some faceless clinic with a doctor that he's never seen before.
This doctor has probably never seen him before. He doesn't know if he can trust this doctor or this patient, if he's compliant. He's going, I'm not going to take the risk on this guy. The hell with it kind of thing. And that's, you get into that kind of thought process. And that's where, as he said, Mark, if you've got a doctor who knows you and knows the situation, it becomes easier to make those judgment calls.
Right,
whereas that
right.
doctor may be very appropriate saying, I don't know this guy. I don't know if he's compliant. I don't know if he's going to come back and check on. I don't know anything about this guy. I'm not going to take that risk.
So it takes him off the trail.
And that's a great point about having a family practice. Yeah. And I think what you're doing is an incredible idea.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's working. And I commend you for doing it. Thanks, Jazz. Yeah.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the call. You got it, partner. Bye-bye.
Yeah. The important thing, Jazz, is that a lot of people, and those doctors are afraid too, but the DEA and Department of Justice is not out there to give doctors a hard time or patients, all right? I mean, when you get into scheduled medicines, there's a bunch of rules and things that have to be done. But those of us that have done it for years, those rules make sense, all right? The Department of Justice is not out there to give doctors a hard time. And a lot of patients, and there's doctors that are afraid. I have doctors, in fact, many, many primary care physicians and specialists today don't want to prescribe a narcotic. They'd rather send you to the pain clinic because they're afraid to get in trouble. They don't want to take that risk. And I can't say it loud enough. The DEA and Department of Justice is not out there to give doctors a hard time.
No, they're not out there to give doctors a hard time.
I mean, there's a bunch of rules. You got to do it their way. Don't get me wrong. They have to be done their way.
No, they're way too busy to go after doctors. They're busy shredding the Constitution and going after conservatives and Tea Party members, for the love of Pete. We'll be right back. More with Dr. Mensing after this on KNZ. Metaphorical ramifications of specifications and anti-inflammatory dedications. Yes.
What can I take to get rid of this headache that Jazz is giving me right now?
What can he take? Percocet. We were just talking about Percocet. Okay. That's that would be the level, I think, that you would need, actually.
I think there's something that works very well for that. It's called a volume control.
Good one.
That is good.
Oh, boy.
Or should Chris be taking lithium? Chris be taking lithium?
It's interesting because lithium literally lowers the risk of dementia.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. No,
really? Chris. And it fights depression.
Yeah. Well, what happened is 35 years ago when I went to medical school, we knew there are three counties in Texas, Jazz, that have
low incidence of
depression. And what they found is there's these very low doses of lithium in the water.
They put lithium in the water.
No, it's natural. It's natural.
Oh, it's natural. They didn't put it in.
No, it's natural.
Oh, it's just there.
Well, okay. We have restudied these communities, and there is hardly any dementia. And
so
in fact,
it lowers dementia.
Yes, and the newest studies suggest that if you take about 30 milligrams of lithium, and you can buy this over the counter, essentially, these low doses every day, some people believe, a lot of doctors are doing this, I believe that it will prevent dementia. Now, we don't really know that for sure. The long-term
depression.
But there is some very good studies
I've
about
got
this.
Some ideas for the water in Oildale. I think we need lithium if we don't already have more lithium. No, we've got we can't possibly have it. We have demented people in Oildale. There, you can't walk down the street without bumping into a demented person.
I was going to say, could drop some of that off at the White House if you want.
Let's go to Mark number two on the Jazz McKay Show. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Jazz.
Mark, how can we help you?
I was listening to the conversation about the dementia, and then you tied in inflammation, and I have multiple physical problems, somehow it ties into inflammation. I'm not sure how it is. I'm a Parkinson's patient. I'm a diabetic. I have damaged nerve pain all over my lower body. I have fibromyalgia. I have memory loss. I have all the symptoms of Parkinson's. My symptoms are always changing. And notice that when my inflammation in my legs is up, in other words, I have a tremendous amount of swelling, my pain level goes way up. And just like that last Mark you talked to, all I can take is tramadol.
You know, Mark, when you're diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, the two issues, Parkinson's disease on its own get a dementia from the Parkinson's dementia with time, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, depending, there's some end-stage, very severe Parkinson's, like what's called Schreider-Dragger, that's actually quite rare. But with these patients, they have a lot of blood pressure problems and issues with that. And they can't keep their blood pressure up, stuff like that. And what happens, they can have, from that, secondary issues with vascular dementia.
Well, my Parkinson's has been around for the last 25 years. I'm like Michael J. Fox, I'm early onset.
Yeah. Did you ever use any street drugs of any type?
Never.
Never, okay. Because there are some issues with that that can be
affected. Yeah, I understand. I read articles
on that. People can get Parkinson's. Parkinson's is, so far as the dementia, I have some patients with dementia from Parkinson's, and there's not an awful lot you can do about it. The Parkinson's has to be treated. Number two, I'm a strong believer in these patients that there's something that you can do that helps, and you can buy it over the counter actually, and it's really pretty cheap. But you want to take about 300 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, all right, and then something called PQQ. It's a paraquinone, but it's essentially, if you go to the health food store, they'll sell it to you, about 20 milligrams you take, and it helps to absorb the coenzyme Q10. And there are some studies that suggest...
Say that again,
PQ, just say PQQ. You go to the to your drugstore or your
the Q10 that
The coenzyme Q10, about 300 milligrams, and then you ask also for about 20 milligrams. Just say PQQ, and they will know what it is. And it's essentially it's a medicine that helps absorb and drive in the Q10 into the body. And there are some studies that suggest that that may make a difference with rebuilding some of the things with Parkinson's and all dementias, by the way.
Well,
and I like it because it's cheap and safe.
Is, how does the inflammation work into all that? You're talking about inflammatory system causing problems. And what I've noticed in myself is that when I have inflammation problems, the more inflammation problems I have, the more all the other symptoms come up on, and all the and my pain level goes way up. You know, I'm like off the chart pain wise. I can't even control
it. Well, Mark, there's two. You're really talking about two issues here. The Parkinson's dementia has to do with some cholinergic parts, things in the brain, in the basal ganglia that are essentially wearing out, and there's a problem there. All right. That's the first question, and that itself with long-term, because the brain essentially runs on these cholinergic fibers and these medicines or some chemicals that are caused by this or that used in neurotransmission, eventually will develop dementia. But there's a secondary issue you're talking about. If you have inflammatory problems and you have pain, all pain is worsened by inflammation, all right? In fact, that's one of the reasons why these studies that came out a couple of years ago where you can use high doses of D3 to get your D3 levels up to above 80 to 100 and take something called Omeprim, which is essentially a essential fatty acid with about 30 essential fatty acids. And we know, we have studies that have shown that 80% of all osteoarthritis pains will go away with that after 3 months. That's an anti-inflammatory combination that works for that. Well, the same thing is we know that if you have chronic pain, all right, and chronic pain, and there's an inflammatory component, many of us doctors will treat that inflammatory component and cut the pain often by half. So there's really two issues I hear, Mark. I don't think the Parkinson's disease is an inflammatory process causing your pain. There's actually two issues.
Well,
now,
I believe that's from my diabetic.
Probably. Yes.
Yeah, and what it is, my body just basically started falling apart like 15 years ago. It's been one thing after another. You know, I've lost 240 pounds, so I could get rid of the diabetes and control it, so I didn't have to take the medication for that.
Well,
I don't take diabetic medication, but I do have to take the Parkinson's medication.
What you may want to ask your doctor to do is check an insulin level and a hemoglobin A1C. What people
hemoglobin A1C?
And insulin levels. Because if your insulin levels are above 3 or a hemoglobin A1C is elevated, you still are a diabetic or a pre-diabetic. And essentially what happens, that doubles the risk with diabetes of dementia, all right? Mm-hmm. Hypertension alone, if you treat hypertension properly, that will decrease the risk of Alzheimer's by 50%.
Hypertension is high blood pressure, right?
Yeah, that's correct. If you treat...
I have exactly the opposite. I have very low blood pressure.
Well, many patients on end-stage Parkinson's disease have very low blood pressure. And you'll also, if you're low blood pressure, have trouble when you stand up getting dizzy and all sorts of other. So you're getting more into the what's called Schreider-Dreger.
And I also have a chronic anemia where my blood count is always down.
Yeah, you need to see your doctor and talk to him.
I can't get, they're overwhelmed by all the, they're trying to put all the clues together. Trying to find which way to turn,
Mark, some of these illnesses are not easy to treat, okay? I don't want to,
I
have no magic bullet for you,
ones.
You know what I mean? They can be very difficult, especially if you get into these end stages of Parkinson's disease. It becomes difficult. There's no easy way to treat them.
Mark, God bless you, brother.
Hey, well, thank you. Good talking to you.
Take care of yourself.
Best of all.
Good to see you, doctor.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 871-3300 is the phone number for the practice.
We have more and more people calling.
We're going to take a break, come back, and if you're cool with that.
Yeah, we'll get a few
more patients right away. We'll take a break. 871-3300, that's the phone number for the practice. Call them up and find out more about prepaid family medicine with a difference. It's the practice. This is Jazz McKay with Dr. Mensken.
KNZR. Jazz McKay on 1560 AM and 97.7 FM KNZR.
And we are back, Jazz McKay. program on KNCR with April, our next caller. April, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, Jazz. I just want you to know I just love you and listen to you every day.
Well, you are a voluptuous love goddess, and I don't say that to just anyone. Yes, indeed, darling. What can we do for you today, sweetie?
Well, I'm listening to Dr. Mensing here as I'm working around my house, and I have restless leg syndrome, and I've had it for some time over the years, and off and on, but it's become very chronic where I take Requip, which I understand is a medication that they give people with Parkinson's.
That's correct.
I pray I don't have that, but this in itself is enough because it's no pain involved, but it's just extremely aggravating, and I can't do anything with my leg except be on my feet and move around a lot. And there's no napping.
So what is your question, Julie? Or April, I mean. I'm sorry.
Yeah, restless leg syndrome.
I take
Requip for it.
How does that?
And I have it chronic every day.
What is that? Is that like at night when you're laying in bed, you start shaking your leg or what?
Well, it's like your legs want to go running while you're trying to sleep. Your legs have the urge to move all the time.
And it can be very involved. Yeah, and it can be very disabling.
Is that neurological? Yeah.
Yes. The Requip she's taking, it works, and
it is
a Parkinsonian medicine. The other thing people don't understand, just because you have restless legs and you're taking a Parkinsonian medicine doesn't mean to say you're going to get Parkinson's or anything like that.
Yeah.
Number two, the medicine, the Requip, is a very minor dose of it may be a 1/100th, I'm not sure exactly the dose, but a minimal dose.
I take 1 milligram.
But a minimal dose of what you would take for Parkinson's treatment, okay? Mm-hmm. It takes just these minor doses. And these medicines are very safe. Most of them, many of them are generic now. If you get the generic, it's actually quite reasonable to take. Mirapex is a little bit more money, but Requip is actually fairly reasonable.
It's Ropinolol.
Yeah, it's really generic reasonable, and it works well. Several things that I would encourage if you came to the practice, what we'd do is there's no problem with that medicine. It has not very many drug interactions. It's safe. It's fairly reasonable. We encourage that you should sometime have your magnesium levels checked, your potassium levels checked, and make sure that there's no protein and calcium issues. All right, this is a simple blood test to do that. Most of these patients are not an issue, but you don't want to miss that kind of thing. All right, like I had a lady this morning that has, she was having leg cramps actually, and this is something different.
Yes.
And her bottom line is that she's on a diuretic, and every time her potassium gets low, she gets these leg cramps. Mm. And the thing there is we have to essentially check her magnesium and her potassium. But for her, all of a sudden it wasn't working anymore. She took it and it didn't work. So then we have to look at what else is happening, or is the diagnosis correct?
So is the Requip working for you now, April?
Yes. I take, rather than take the full dose when I need something, when I need to take it, I just bite it in half.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I don't get real sleepy and yawn like crazy. But like in church, sitting through worship, sometimes my legs will start acting up and I got to go stand up in the back, and it's so aggravating. Or if I'm driving my car, you know, in the early part of the day, sometimes it'll start in and I just want to push my feet through the floorboard. It gets the feeling so aggravating.
It's sort of like an urge, Jazz,
that
you can't control.
Like I say, there's no pain.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I remember my sister and I both, which I'm talking about 10, 11 years old, I used to get this feeling. I was talking to my dad about it, and my sister said, "Yeah, I do too. I just want to go run. I'm laying in bed, and I just want to run." What did that happen to an 11-year-old kid? How's that happen?
I don't know
both
about that.
Both of my girls get it.
Interesting.
Really? How old are your girls?
Well, they both live in Potlatch, Idaho, and they're in their early to mid. Well, let's see, Allison's in her 40s. And Bonnie is in her mid-30s.
So is it hereditary?
I don't know, Jazz. I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't know.
I haven't been able to find anybody that knows anything about what causes it or why, you know, how to make it go away.
Julie or April, we don't really know. There are some theories about it, what to do it. We know what works for it. It works quite well. But what causes, I'm not sure it's well-defined yet.
Well, I'll just keep taking my pills, I guess.
That's right. As long as it's working, I guess. So she's going to be on those pills for the rest of her life, I guess, right?
Probably.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Julie, we're not going to be able to get to your question today. We ran out of time here this afternoon. But be sure and call back next week. with Dr. Mensing here on the Jazz McKay Show. Doc, thanks for being here once again. 871-3300.
You know, Jazz, can I just make one announcement?
Yes, sir, go right ahead.
But October 26th, 6 o'clock of the evening, we're having a special seminar for 1 hour, 6 p.m., and it's open to the public on addiction things.
Very good.
Really neat on addiction, on how
on
to
what
solve.
Day again? On
October 26th, Monday. One of our doctors is going to be doing it. It's
at
on addiction. And it'd be very, very good.
Call them for more information at 871-3300. Back after this, more of the Jazz McKay Show on KNZR.